call themselves
Heroes Asylum.
Uno more.
Welcome everybody to Heroes Asylum, my fellow morons.
So that was mean. What was that about? Somebody woke up on the wrong side of the bed.
I mean, the intro is talking about morons, you know, morons. So I figured, you know, we're all fellow morons in here. At least I know you and I. At least I know you and I are. So.
Oh god, yeah. That's not even a question anymore. We are a bunch of morons.
So after a couple of weeks off, of course, you know me, I had another medical emergency, but we're back again.
Yep.
So, but this month we're gonna change it up a little bit. We're gonna start off with normal, and then we're gonna like roll the dice and do something different. But we're doing fantasy this month, and we thought, you know, fantasy covers so much. So instead of like drilling down to just one like little subject, fantasy is just massive. So we're gonna start off with our movies, our favorite movies.
Massive amounts of movies.
Massive.
Like I was before I wrote my list down, I was kind of just like, I do what everybody else does. I'll go to Google and I'll type it in, right? Just to kind of see, like, it won't be what I'll pick, but normally it'll have some of the movies that I got. So I looked it up and I'm like, wow, there's a lot of variety on there.
Yeah.
Like just starting from the 60s and going to like now, it's insane how much of these films are that are out there. So.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, cause most folks, they'll like go back to like the fantasy genre and think straight up, you know, Tolkien and Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit, but like
there's no, by the way, no Lord.
Fantasy was way before that. I mean, you look at Robert E. Howard, you know, who did Conan, and like he was influenced by somebody before that. I mean, so yeah, the fantasy world itself goes like way past that. But yeah, no, I know I tried to stick away. I honestly went with things that like really influenced me growing up. So, granted, yes, you know, Lord of the Rings and a lot of those other ones did influence me, but something more, you know, like memory wise, I think really is what I'm going for.
Like core films that, excuse me, I coughed up in my mouth, but like core films that like when we watched, you know, kind of influenced like other films like of the genre like going on nowadays.
Yeah,
that's where my love is coming from in my list, and you'll see because it's all over the place.
Yeah, mine is too. Yeah. So how have you been doing? I know I kind of said what I've been up to. What have you been up to, man?
No, you know, I'm just doing the same old, you know, nothing super exciting. I went to Acme a couple of days ago just to see what they were having. And I found out that I'm very much behind in this absolute DC world.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I thought it was only going to be like I read originally it was going to be like just five issues for each of the characters. But no, apparently they're still going.
Yeah, I think I think they're up to 10 on the original three, and then I think the other ones are like five or so. Like, and then I think there's another one getting ready to start too. I think it's not like a Titans.
They're doing like Absolute Titans. They're doing They said Absolute Deathstroke. They're making this Absolute series like go forward. This is like a big thing for them now. That's what I actually when I went in there, I asked the guys like, you know, why are they selling so quick? It's like it's a big thing. It's legit going to be like maybe the main DC universe in comics coming soon, from what I heard. But
I don't think they'll do that. No, I think it'll be its own like fall under like the Black Label kind of thing, where it'll be its own world. I don't think it'll be the DC world. That sounds a little far fetched to wipe out everything like that.
Yeah, I mean that's the way they were talking, but
they're not even connected. I mean, really, they're not interconnected at all. They don't even. I don't even think they've ever hinted at it.
No, like this is. I guess if you read the last continuity of whatever big event DC had, like this universe was created from the one that ended in like the last issues. I'm not sure if I read that correctly. Like Darkseid ended the universe, and then he remade it, and this is like another.
Yes and no, because it's kind of split up. It was Absolute, and then it was the All In. And that's why you're getting like kind of, yeah, that's why I'm saying the All In is the primary continuity. Like I said, I think we're really looking at a huge Elseworld possibly with Absolute. I can definitely see.
It's probably going to be the biggest Elseworlds that they've ever had, because like their Elseworlds have been like a couple issues and done, but they're keeping this going.
Well, I'm not saying this is going to be Elseworld. It's going to be like Elseworld. I think it's just going to be its own thing. It won't connect to Elseworld or the main continuity. It'll just be Absolute. And it'll just go on its own little merry way, which that's fine. I mean, it's darker, it's grittier, it's like some of the some of the humor in it's great. I mean, just the twist on the characters and where they came from and how they are, and you know, it's
and I did not think I was gonna like it, to be honest. Oh, really? I was ready to poo-poo this.
Oh no.
And then I picked up the Batman issue, and I was like, holy crap, this is different, but sort of makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay. And then I have to keep in mind Gotham. Think Gotham.
Yeah. So. All right, man. So let's go ahead and get started. Why don't you knock your first one out of the park?
Hell yeah. I'm going to knock off one that's a fun one. And all these that have in common in my list is that they're fun and they influence who I am, to be honest. And the first one is Hercules, 1983 with Lou Ferrigno. This movie is one of the first films that my dad took me with my brother in New York City in like a very sketchy part of town where they kind of like little peep show like kind of theaters. And he took me to see this film. And let's just say it's a little risque in the film too. But to me, it's like it's everything I like. It's cosmic Hercules. He's literally fighting like mechanical like creatures. They're not even dragons because they couldn't, I guess, do the effects in dragons. So they were like kind of steampunk figures. He's going over to rainbows. And Leo Ferrigno, for what he is, man. Like, I always thought, like, I envisioned him from the comics. He looked like what Leo did in this film. Like, he had the beard, the build, and everything. It's a weird movie, but it's one of my favorites.
Yeah, actually, I vaguely remember, I think probably VHS, like when I was, you know, when I was younger, that's where I kind of got some influence from, like, fantasy was my grandparents. And, but yeah, I vaguely remember seeing this one, and, it was an interesting,
it's an interesting take. Hey,
it's got to be better than Schwarzenegger's Hercules in New York. All right.
Yeah. that was just bad.
Yeah. That one was a rough one. I'm kind of going to go a little, and I usually do. Because of just the story of how, like he's telling the story to his son and how like he's like his son's like how he's just so full of it. You know, he's all his stories and everything. And I absolutely loved the movie. Albert Finney was amazing in it. And Ewan McGregor, of course, I'm a huge mark for Ewan McGregor.
Ewan.
So, but you know, I absolutely love it. And this is one of my rare moments where I'm like, you know, Tim does quirky great, but what he did with this was amazing.
Yeah, it was more of an intimate movie. Like you said, he's always all over the place. But there are directors like that who, you know, they stick to one niche and that's who they are. But when they do like something completely different, it comes out pretty good. And sometimes they stop doing that. You know, I'm just going to keep going what I normally kept, what I normally do, just be weird and wacky. That's what Tim does. But like, yeah, this film was more intimate.
Yeah.
But it had that grand just like storytelling stuff.
Because as he's telling the stories of the people he's meeting on, you know, on his journey, they're grand stories, they're fantastical stories. So I always love that concept of it.
Yeah, definitely. And like I said, just totally different from Tim. And the way that he does the storytelling, man, just kind of brought me back to when my dad used to tell me stories when I was a way young lad back in the day. But yeah, just really good movie. Too bad he doesn't do more of those.
Yeah, I wish he would.
So, I guess I'm going next. Yeah. So, this is one of my favorite movies. I didn't think it was going to be one of my favorite movies, but it turned out to be. And I think Jones is going to get really mad that I chose this film. And that's the remake of The Sorcerer's Apprentice with Nicolas Cage.
First off, great movie.
Oh, man. Like, I remember you told me that you love this movie. And I was like, and then I had to rewatch it again. I was like, dude, this is really good. Like, the fantasy elements are dope. The soundtrack is amazing. Like, Nick Cage in the movie is awesome. Like, you had Alfred Molina in this film, too, as one of the wizards. And, like, they talks about the history of Merlin and, like, Morgana the Fae. And it's just so dope. And it's updated in a way where it's cool. Like, I like the all new magical tricks. Like, when he had the Falcon and in the Empire State Building, it just turned real. And it started flying. Just, like, cool stuff like that, man. And just, I've just grown to love this movie over the years.
Yeah, no, actually, yeah, that's one of my, it is one of my favorites. And if you're a Disney fan, it's definitely got a twist of Fantasia to it. Because when you see like one of the scenes where he cleans up the studio, that's mm-hmm. Fantasia. The dancing mops and the buckets.
Yeah, the dancing mops. That's
straight Fantasia. And I've honestly, for me, this is one of my introductions to Teresa Palmer, who plays his love interest in this. Yeah, that's Teresa Palmer. She actually ended up being in the Discovery Witches series, which I'm huge, massive fan of those.
I just that first season. I haven't gone on to season two yet, but
season two gets better because they don't stick into contemporary time. So that's why I think you might do it the second. Yeah.
I like the first season. It was different, like definitely different.
But then you got Monica Bellucci, who's also in there. She plays his love interest as well. She plays Nicolas Cage's love interest. Like she's just.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, man. You got there's some good actors in that movie. Yeah. Now, unfortunately, I did not choose that one, so I am not upset with that. That's a good pull, though, man.
Yeah, man. I had to steal from your playbook, man.
That's fair, man. So now I think you and I talked about this movie a while ago, and I don't think you ever watched it or you don't remember it or something, but this is like a 1981 movie. It's a dark, dark fantasy. It's called Dragon Slayer.
Oh, I got it on my list.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, hell yeah. I remember that one. Oh, dude. Yeah, with the dragon. Dude, yeah. I think that was one of the first special effects that was done by ILM, I think, for George Lucas. And that dragon looked amazing, and it still looks amazing.
Yeah, it's to this day. I watched it like a few months ago, and it's just like, granted, like when you're watching the dragon fly, it's a glider, because you never see him when he's flying. You never see him move his wings. He's just gliding. But what is amazing is the practical effects when you're like seeing the dragon face to face. And I love the dark atmosphere. I've never seen anything like that before. Like I read fantasy, seen some fantasy, but nothing like I said, it's called a dark fantasy movie. It is just twisted and dark, and just the directions they go.
There's a scene in this movie that I remember vividly of the dragon when he's talking to I forgot the actor's name. He's playing like the hero, but you see in the background, he's just sitting there and it's in the sea of like flames. And you see him just kind of like curled over and like looking at him. And I was like, wow, they made this dragon so freaking terrifying in this film. And like you said, he doesn't fly. He's just like in limited spaces. But what you see of him, it's so good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's amazing. Oh. But yeah, no, that was his. That was actually that guy, that actor's first movie. And he's also and this annoyed me. I mean, I know he's an actor, so obviously he's not going to portray the same characters. But he went from that to Ghostbusters 2, playing Jansen, the love interest, or the guy that gets possessed by Viggo.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's the same actor. Yeah, that's the same actor.
Oh shit!
Yeah, so it's like the guy had an amazing career. I mean, Dragon Slayer, Sophie's Choice, Heat. I mean, he has amazing like credentials. But then when I saw him, like
he's gonna be known for that goofball character in Ghostbusters 2.
Like, man, no, so. not that one. There's so much more.
It was awful. He was the worst part of that movie.
Yeah, that was. I was like, man, especially. I think he was also in Ally McBeal as well. I think he was one of the main cast on Ally McBeal. But yeah, no, that is a dark, dark fantasy. If nobody's ever seen it, I think they're running it on like Hulu or something like that. But it is really good. It's like basically it's sort of telling the end of the world of magic, like, you know, the dragons are dying off, the magicians are dying off, and it's just sort of like his overall story, but amazing, just amazing scenes. And but yeah, I absolutely love that movie.
Excellent choice. And I, like I said, I did have it in my list. So.
I thought you and I talked about it, and you're like, I don't remember that one.
We did. Okay. How many conversations have we had about movies like this?
Yeah, true.
This ain't the first time. So I'll go next. Mine is actually a recent one, like maybe in the last 15 years. And a movie that I think I kind of poo-pooed on, but then I re-saw it on Netflix a couple nights ago, and I was like, man, this is pretty good. That's Solomon Kane.
Yep.
Like it's like Max von Sydow, one of his last films, and Pete Postlewaite's in it too. It's a really good film, and I really don't know why I got so poo-pooed on. Because everything about this movie is about the redemption story from him and like the character itself, like special effects. I mean, you talk about like deep dark fantasy. This is definitely one of them because like this guy is not a good dude, and like his whole redemption story throughout, like it's just one of those films that I just kind of dug and like kind of went under the cracks.
Yeah. Now this wasn't one of his last movies. You got to realize that movie was made in 2009.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Max didn't pass away until like the 2020. I think Mandalorian might have been one of his last actually, but yeah, no. Yeah, actually, it's one of those ones, same thing. I kind of came across it like Netflix one day, you know. I was like, yeah, what is this? And I, but apparently there's like, that's one of those ones I hit. That's, that one's like pre Lord of the Rings as well, because that's written by Robert E. Howard. That's part of the Conan verse as well. Like with him, Conan, and like Red Sonja, they all were not in the same universe, but they were all kind of written by Robert E. Howard. Yeah, and if nobody's ever read any Robert E. Howard, you just go in. The Conan books are they're not like a book. They're little short anthologies telling the story of Conan, and but they kind of do the same thing with Red Sonja and Solomon Kane. I think honestly, I think the reason I looked in it was because your old screen name.
Oh, <right. laughs>
I think that's the reason. I was like, oh, let me see this. I'm gonna brag on Jeff about this. And I was like, watching. I'm like, son of a bitch. Yeah. It's a good movie. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe the production quality. I don't know why that one won under the.
It's like it has, yeah. I didn't get it. Like you had like really good acting in the film, and like you said, it's the beginning, like 15 minutes when Solomon Kane goes into this, you know, vault and he encounters like the Angel of Death. It's like just cool stuff. I really don't understand like the hate for this film. It really kind of bugs me. I'm like, come on, man, this is not terrible. I know what terrible is.
Yeah.
And this was one of them.
Yes, you do, sir. You own that badge with pride.
I do. What you got next, sir?
My next one is actually another more contemporary one. Actually, probably the most contemporary one I think I have on here. 2017, The Shape of Water.
Oh, okay. Del Toro.
Yeah, I mean, just not only just the imagery, the storytelling. It's just a beautiful story. And just, I mean, anything Del Toro does, it's just, I mean, I have never seen him do anything poor.
Bad.
Yeah.
And like even like his Pinocchio movie isn't bad, you know, like people kind of like, oh, it's like this, but if you know Del Toro, he has a style, and that's going to be the style you're going to like.
And I understand that Doug Jones is an amazing actor, but I feel like Del Toro gets Doug in a way that presents it. And this is one of those ones. Like Doug's done a lot. I mean, he's done a lot of like movies, television series. If anybody watched the Star Trek Discovery, he was in that, and great in those. But something about, like, I think this was like his first like real true, and I don't want to say breakthrough, but where he really got the recognition that he deserved, like in the mainstream, was through this movie. And it's just a gorgeous movie and how it's made.
He doesn't speak neither. Like most of his communications are just like verbal. I mean, not verbal, just like, you know, physically, just like, you know, with his eyes, his body. So yeah, his performance was great in this film. I think it won an Oscar, if I'm not sure. I think the film did. And Del Toro won, I think, won for best director that year too. And it was well deserved. Like, I didn't think I was going to like this film because it's not, it's a love story basically. Yeah. It's different. So I was like, I don't know. And then I liked it. Like, I've seen it twice because I don't want to see it no more than that. But it's still really, really good. A really good love story too. Very sweet.
Definitely. What you got? All right, there, buddy.
I got one next. And dude, once I say this movie's name, you're going to know right away. Oh yeah, that's a Jeff movie. It came out in 2000s of Gerard Butler's Gods of Egypt. Now, if this is not a movie that's right up my alley, like this movie was shitted on.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
And like really shit it out. And it kind of made me mad because that's Alex Proyas. He directed, you know, the first Crow movie. And he did Dark City, which is another good one, which I would have had on my list, but I didn't think of it till right now. But that's a really, really wild, wild movie.
Yeah, that is. I think you're the one, actually, because I wasn't shitting on it, but it just never caught my interest.
Mm-hmm.
But like once you're like, no, you really need to check it out. I really got into that one because I thought it was just amazingly made.
Yeah, that was just, like it's just cool. It's like a total twist on the whole Egyptian mythology thing. What I liked, and they had good actors in it. Like the way they described the gods, the whole the world of Egypt looked really cool. The underworld, you know, the way the gods were. It's just like it was cool. It kind of like irks me. Like, man, there's another one that people I think just didn't look at it the right way.
Yeah, well, I think wasn't that around the same time the another one that came out that was like really CGI, just like that with gods. I think that might have been like because it kind of came out. I wish I could remember the name of that movie. But yeah, there was another one that came out around that same time. Yeah, you know, which really gets me is because I'm a huge Egyptian like fan, like Egyptology. I absolutely love it. And that's why I was like, why didn't I drift this way?
Yeah, I mean, like, so am I. Like, I love playing games or PS5. Like, I played, like, the recent God of War game was like Norse mythology. And, like, before that was Greek mythology. So anything in that, around that area, I love all that shit. I watch anything like that, even if it's bad. But when they did Egyptian, like, you know, the way they did it with the mythology in this film, they made it just fun. Was it great? No.
Oh, yeah.
But for me, it works. Like, it pinpoints everything that I like. Get it weird. Get it crazy. Get it out of control. Like, this shit doesn't make sense. It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. If you're going for a fun movie, just watch it as a fun movie. They're like I always compare them, like, this is the prequel to those Mummy movies. Just think of it like that.
Nice. Okay, that's a good concept, yeah.
See? So what you got there, sir?
So mine is 1982. All-star cast, by the way. But it just was a complete bomb. And that's The Beastmaster.
Ooh.
I mean, you got Mark Singer, Tanya Roberts, man. John Amos, Rip Torn. I mean, Torn. Just if nobody's ever seen it, it's
basically Kodo and Poco. Like that was his two possums, right? Kodo,
Kodo. They were ferrets and they squeaked. And for the longest time, I thought that's what a noise made until I owned my own ferrets. And then I was like, nope, okay, they don't squeak.
They don't squeak, damn it.
Yeah. That's what's so funny. Every time you see a ferret on TV, they're like, eek, eek. I'm like, nope, that's not what they do. That's not it. But yeah, it was so fun. I mean, just again, Singer, I became a fan of Singer's with this one and V. But then you had Tanya Roberts. Was it Tanya Roberts? Wasn't she in Sheena? Wasn't she?
Yeah,
the one? Sheena. Yeah, so I mean, she kind of had a thing going around that time. Like I said, yeah, early 80s. Was interesting for movies like this, but I thought this was just a fun movie. Yeah, a little cheesy, but yeah, no, huge box office bomb.
Yeah,
but yeah, no,
but yeah.
I think I rediscovered and refell into it. I think when the HBO, like the original HBO subscription came out, that was a big one. So it was all like constantly replaying all the time. Like everybody jokes about like some of the free services now. They're like, man, they play the same fucking five movies. Yeah, so did HBO in the 80s.
So did HBO back in the day. I mean, trust you, their library was not vast.
Yeah, no. But you know, it's your standard sword and sorcery movie. You know, wild guy, he's out there living his life, sword, you know, and he has to go against an evil wizard. They're not breaking like storytelling, like, you know.
You describe the entire plots of all the 80s movies.
Exactly. Just that's pretty much everything. We just some dude, evil wizard. That's it.
Yeah, going on a journey, like the poor farm boy, like, oh, can he be a hero? No, it's literally the same exact story throughout all these films. Nothing is any different. just letting you know now, it's like every single thing is the same way. The one thing, before we go Beastmaster, just one thing I do remember from this film, so he had a tiger, because I know he had like the two possums, and then he had a tiger, and I think they painted it black. Did it not paint it in black? And it just I always thought that looked
cool. It was supposed to be like a big panther or something like that. I'm like, nah, yes. That's not it.
And you could tell they painted because you still saw the lines from the tiger. It's like, they weren't hiding it.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just remember that. My next one is in the same era. And I classify it as sci-fi fantasy. And it is one of my favorite movies, low-key. And I think I'm going to shock Jones with this one. It's Date with an Angel.
Oh, yes. Wow.
You ever watched Date with an Angel, especially if you're a young lad like I was, and you fell in love with that angel, and they also had an awesome soundtrack as well. Like, Real Life was on there with the song Send Me an Angel, and there's a Steve Winwood song also on there. Dude, it is sci-fi fantasy. It's ridiculous. Phoebe Cates is in this movie too. Like, the dude's breaking up with Phoebe Cates. An angel falls down from heaven. She can't speak. He's falling in love with the angel. So on and so forth. But it's just a fun little movie. There was another one I was going to put on there, Stairway to Heaven. I'm not sure you had that one. But like also kind of like a fantasy movie. Richard Mall's in it. Or yeah. Richard Milligan is in it. But I chose this one because this one I remember fondly. And the soundtrack was really rad.
I don't remember. Like, I'm looking at like the clips from it. I really don't remember this movie. I remember the poster. Like, yes. The poster looks
so you remembered something. That's fine. That's more something.
But yeah, that's but yeah, the rest, I'm like trying to look at stills from this and I don't got nothing. Got nothing on there. But hey, you know,
if
you enjoyed it.
Dude, I did. These are films that we enjoyed, and this is one of those films. And I was like, man, Angel Can't Fall Down to Me.
That's another show altogether.
So
I'm going to jump into like old. I'm going back. The Seventh Seal.
Ooh.
Max von Sydow, he's basically, it's a Swedish movie, but he plays Death. And the story, the primary story about it is like during the Black Death, it tells a journey of a medieval knight. And then he finds out, you know, everybody around him's dying. So he ends up playing against death to try to win his life back. And it's just the fantasy concept. And it's one of those ones that when you think to like the 90s, especially think like to Kevin Smith and like other actor, you know, or like Quentin Tarantino, where it's a lot of like dialogue. This is heavy dialogue. Like it's like, look, yeah, they're across the board talking things out. One of the, I don't know if that's where my love of those movies came from was this, but you know, like I've got a lot of movies that are like not a lot of action. It's just a lot of,
straight dialogue.
I mean, yeah, we've did, The Man Who, you know, from Earth, you know, that, which is literally takes place in a room with five other people. And it's just dialogue. It's just them talking things out. And this could have been the origin of it. But you know, if nobody's ever seen it, it's an old movie. You could pretty much find it everywhere because it's like massive.
Yeah.
But yeah, 1957. But yeah, it's just it was Ingrid Bergman directed. But yeah, Max plays the knight, and Bing Erkdoff. I'm sure my ex wife will yell at me for butchering a Swedish name.
God,
but
God bless you.
Yeah, but that's who played Death. But yeah, no, the death that you see in this movie, if nobody's ever seen Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, that's literally where they like took that concept, like his look, like just all pale, you know, not a skeleton or anything like that, just a pale guy in a black costume.
If I remember correctly, I think the Last Action Hero movie,
yep,
with Arnold Schwarzenegger, had that version of death come out from the screen. That's the same one, right?
Yep, same one, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. And that was like a straight conversation movie. Like, yeah, like, you know, it's always interesting to be, you know, talking to death like that and just like the interweavings of both minds. And sometimes movies like that do work. Like, I love the Kevin Smith movies and they're all dialogue, man.
Yeah.
All dialogue and razzing at each other. And it kind of like makes you think, especially a movie like this.
Yep. But definitely, yeah, that's one of it's like. Like, obviously, I didn't see it when I was a kid. It was more like, you know, in my 20s, I finally came across. I'm like, well, what is this? And just dropped my jaw. Because, I mean, by that point, I'd seen Max and a few other things. So I just wasn't sure, you know, what else he had done. And that's when I came across. I was like, oh, okay, this will make you stop and think. It's one of those movies where after you get done watching, you're going to spend a couple of days. You don't want to watch anything else. You're just going to think.
You're like, wait a minute. Yeah. I've had many movies like that. But an excellent, excellent film, sir. So I guess I'm going to go, and I guess I'm going to go way back too. Not as far back as Jones, but like pretty far back. And I remember this movie very fondly, watching it on ABC station, Saturday nights at 9 p.m. No, it's actually Sunday, because it's a Sunday at 7 p.m. And that's Sinbad and the Maiden Voyage from 1971. Yeah. Dude, I like this movie was literally my introduction to like fantasy movies, because I had never seen anything really like it. I hadn't seen Star Wars yet, and I was still very young. But this is like literally the first movie I saw, and I just fell in love. Like the action, like the creature cremation and all that, the ships, just the story, the vastness, Sinbad being a cool badass himself, and like this, it's the introduction to everything that I like. This was like opened the door. For all my strange and weirdness, you can blame this movie. So this is literally it. And it's one of my favorites. And anytime it pops on, I'll sit there and like, yep, let me go watch it. Because back then it felt like it was a long movie. And watching it now, it's not very long, like maybe an hour and 16 minutes. But to me, it felt like it was a 2-hour movie.
And that was part of like a serial, wasn't it? Wasn't there like a bunch of Sinbad movies, if I remember correctly? Yeah.
Yes, sir. Sinbad and Maiden Voyage, Sinbad and the Seven Deadly Sins. Yeah, there was a couple of Sinbad versus somebody, but yeah, they kept going on and on. And I watched them all, but this was the introduction of everything. They made it like a series, I think, years ago, like in the 2000s, but it was too 90s looking, and I don't know, just never struck me.
Yeah, I know. They tried to do a couple of them, but I mean, they were still fun. I mean, I think back when the remakes or the retries of those, I think that was like right in the, like, deep in like the Xena and Hercules kind of time frame.
Yeah.
So they all sort of like kind of had the same feel and the same. I'm like, okay, I've seen this in Hercules. I'm good. I don't need to see somebody else.
And then every show had that way. Like you had like one and done shows that like those, like, dude, they're all shot the same fucking way.
Yeah.
But always a fun one. And like I said, intro for me. So it's always going to hold a little special place in my heart.
Very cool. Now mine.
Uh-oh.
1992. It's fantasy, but it's a little satirical, and I love the fantasy aspect of it, of like how doing something to like for longevity in your life, like, you know, everybody's like, you know, trying to get power, but these people wanted, they weren't about power, they're about beauty and about living forever. But that's Death Becomes Her.
Oh.
So yeah,
okay.
Little Bruce Willis, Meryl Streep, Goldie Hawn.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, because you got to. I mean, this is fantasy. It's basically about.
Oh yeah, it counts definitely. There's some witchcraft going on.
Yeah, these two women, they both are like wanting to like maintain their beauty, and they hate each other, just despise each other to no end. But they've, you know, they're both pining after this one man for some reason. He was just lost in his life. He's just he's an utter mess himself.
Wasn't he a plastic surgeon?
Yeah. Well, he wasn't. Okay, was, and then I think in the movie, I think because of like everything that's happened in his life, he became a mortician. So he was like getting people prepared for death instead.
Dude, this is a wacky movie, man.
Oh, I absolutely love it. You got Isabella Rossellini, who, you know, who makes a reference to like how Hollywood is still around, you know, like these people just around you. You do this thing for 10 years and then you vanish. And I'm in love with Hollywood, the concept of the old Hollywood and everything like that. So with this, it was sort of like a mixed bag of like, okay, this is fantasy and witchcraft, but then also it's got this darker side of like the old Hollywood, you know. It's like they're at a party and one of them's like, you guys have to remember, we don't go out in public, even if it's for a joke. And then the camera parent pans over to Elvis. He's like, ah, I wanted a burger. What? But it's got great humor in it. And then it's just like these two women who despise each other are stuck because they both decided to do something. They are now stuck with each other for the rest of their lives, for eternity, because they cannot die no matter what damage becomes them.
Yeah, and they keep deteriorating throughout the whole film to like the ending. They don't even show their faces. That's how bad they're getting.
Yeah.
It's just like that whole relationship between them two is just literally killing them.
Yeah.
But they can't die. So they both got to just, you know, endless suffering.
Yeah. It is a fun. It's like it's satirical, but it also falls under that. So yeah, it's one of those ones. It's whenever that movie's on, that's remotes down. I'm stuck. I'm good. So what do you got next there, buddy?
I have another weirdo movie, and this is actually a terrifying movie to me when I watched it as a kid. Now, when I rewatched it recently, it's still kind of creepy. It's The Wizard of Oz, but not The Wizard of Oz you're thinking. It's Return to Oz.
Oh, yeah.
In 1985.
Yeah.
And if you ever watched this movie and you ever watched the original Wizard of Oz, two completely different films.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, here's the premise. Dorothy goes back to Oz. Yep. But she doesn't, it's not the same Oz that she left. And once she gets there, it's the same. It's just really, some of the creatures in this film kind of really creep me out. The way it's shot kind of creeps me out. Like the way, even Dorothy, who ended up being one of the chicks in the craft, which would make sense. She looked kind of creepy herself. And just, like, she didn't look like a happy girl. Like, man, you could tell this girl's going to turn evil any minute now. But a fun movie, and those same kind of Stan Winston kind of creature effects too, which, you know, anything with Stan Winston, I'm going to love, especially his creature effects. So it kind of made the film and the atmosphere in a dark, gloomy kind of Oz.
Well, I don't know how familiar you are with the Oz books, but it is a series. It's not just one book. It's not just the Wizard of Oz. It's actually a series of books, and they do progressively get stranger, darker, more twisted. But yeah, if anybody's ever like wants to like delve in, they're not big books at all. They're like short reads, because you gotta realize, I mean, when he first released those books, it was like 1910s, 1920s. So they weren't like they were more novellas than anything else. But they really take a little darker twist on some of them. But yeah, no, I remember this one. Yeah, it was who was it? What's her name? Forza Balk, I think was her name.
Yeah, that's the girl. Yeah. Yeah, she was in The Craft and. Oh, she was in The Water Boy too. She was
Bobby Boucher's squeeze.
Adam Boucher. Oh, he's still funny.
Oh yeah, awesome. So my next one, and I guess I'm going to stick to the same year. Unfortunately, guys, I know we're showing our age. This is where we grew up. This is what influenced us. So sorry.
No, I told you no Harry Potter in his list.
No. But this one is a massive movie, and I thought this thing would have been huge. It's got a great cult following right now, but I don't remember squat from it when it hit the theaters. I think it was another one of those ones I've discovered VHS. It's a Ridley Scott legend.
Oh.
I mean, you got Tom Cruise, Mia Sara, Tim Curry, who's playing the best devil ever.
Ever.
but it's an amazing story. It's shot beautifully. I'm not a Cruise fan. I don't know if anybody's ever heard me. I'm just not a fan of his. He's got a handful of movies I enjoy watching, and I'll sit down and watch. This is like one of them that I absolutely just love. But if nobody's ever seen it, and you really want a good like taste of what Tim Curry can do, yeah, like he's got range, and the special effects on him for this are just ridiculous.
Every con that I go to, I still see people dressed as Darkness, man. It's just like one of those endless characters. But like, this movie's awesome, man. This is like, if you want a definition of deep, you know, dark fantasy, this is it. And like, the soundtrack is good.
Yep.
Like, yeah, Tom Cruise was decent in this film as a freaking elf or whatever he was. And like, the creatures, besides Darkness, like, you know, they were kind of creepy. The one troll, always like disgusting in a way. The way he's like kind of mocked up, kind of green, like seaweed's kind of going off to his side. Like, and like, you know, it's just, it's so good. It's so good. The conversations with Darkness and the girl when she goes to hell, and like, she slowly starts becoming him. Like, she starts to dress like the Darkness almost with like the changer. It's just, it's wild.
Yeah.
The wild, and it's, but it's a good movie.
And it's just, like you said, it's just one of those ones that just amazes me that like, it didn't do better because of just the story, the cinematography. Just, I mean, obviously, you know, at this point, Scott wasn't the Ridley Scott that we know like by the 90s and stuff like that. But this is like just amazingly well done.
It's kind of like one of those films that when Del Toro did like the movie you mentioned before. It's just like a different movie from Ridley at the time, and it took a step differently than, you know, that's what happens, and it got received poorly, yeah. Which kind of sucks.
Yeah, which I freak. Yeah, because when I watched, I'd already seen Alien, so you know, I was a huge Alien fan, and you know, so I was good with all those. But like I said, this just hit differently, and it didn't care that it was a Scott movie. It was just so damn good.
Felt big, a lot of big lore, and like I said, everything about this movie, it's just the way it's shot. It's just so good. And like I said, like me and my brother would quote Darkness all the time.
Yep.
All the freaking time. What is light without darkness? Like, just
like very, I said, quotable. Yeah, like I said, if people are out there, I'm sure if you're a Tim Curry fan, you already know of this, but just if anybody's been hinted at like wanting to get into him, he's amazing. He does more than Dr. Frankenfurter.
Oh, yeah. Way more. And he's terrifying in this film, too.
Yes.
What do I got? I got one of your favorites on here. Actually, one of my favorites too. I think we've talked about this movie a lot. I think we've done a watch along too, and I think it's in the archives. Sleepy Hollow.
Yes.
Sleepy Hollow with Johnny Depp, man, and Christina Ricci, and Christopher Walken. If you haven't seen this movie, watch it. It is a anticipate of like just horror, fantasy, legend. You know, you got Johnny Depp and his weirdness, which actually kind of works out in this movie. Christina Ricci coming off of, I think, The Addams Family. And this is like one of her first grown-up roles. And then you had Chris Walken in it, which you didn't know was Chris Walken. And then you did. And then you saw him and he's like the weird, like, oh, no wonder he would be headless. Of course.
And you had the Emperor. Come on, man. You got to realize. Yeah, look at the town. I think
Michael Go, right? The Alfred is in it as well.
Like I said, the town elders in that movie were like a who's who of like, it's like when I saw the Emperor, I'm like, yes.
Got everybody in that film, but such a good film, man. Like, it just adds that lore. Like, it added to me, it added like a different, more horror lore to the Legend of Sleepy Hollow more than it had. But like, just the introduction, like the witches and hell, I was into it. Loved it.
Alrighty, so my last one. I'm gonna give you one more after this, but my last one. 1988. High fantasy. This isn't just fantasy. This is high fantasy. And definitely for his recent passing, but Willow.
Oh, yes.
I mean, it's Ron Howard to start off with. So, I mean, and then, of course, you got George Lucas involved in it. So, you know, it's going to just be amazing in just the quality and what they're going to put into it. But just the cast with Warwick Davis. And then, like I said, you had Val Kilmer, Joanne Whalley. And I thought it was just an amazing story. The depth they went to, the special effects, the brownies that were in it. I absolutely love them. I think they were every time I see them, I always think of like a Squeaky and what's his name from Laverne.
Yeah, Squeaky and I hear you're talking about. Yeah, this is
it was just a beautiful, just like beautifully shot. And one of my biggest disappointments in the last few years was that they canceled out the series that they had.
Actually, I got around to seeing it. It wasn't that bad. I don't know why it got canceled.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, again, right now, I think everybody's so like gun shy with like series. They're like, oh, one season, if it doesn't like pop, if it's not The Walking Dead, it's out of here. I'm like, no, you gotta let it breathe, you know?
Yeah, no, we're not that. Sadly, I don't think we're in that era anymore. You can let a show breathe. Which really sucks. But,
like I said, yeah, nowadays it's got to get done. And
it's got to get it fast, get it out there. And great movie, though. Love it, man. What can you say bad about it? I can't say anything bad. I wish I could.
So what you got
last one, man, is another fun one, man. I know I'm sticking to one era, but like all these freaking movies influenced me. 1983's Deathstalker. Yeah, man, the Deathstalker, dude. It's another wild story. Same thing. A hero comes to his being, the long journey. He's looking for this medallion. If he finds the medallion, he's going to rule the world. Simple premise. He's got to stop a magician. Along the way, he meets a love interest. Nothing hard about it. It's about an hour and 20 minutes. Gets to the point. It's weird. It's wacky again. But hey, it was one of the first fantasy films that I liked along with, you know, Sinbad. This was another one. Because it kind of, to me, kind of introed the 80s of what, like, that action type of movie fantasy is going to be. And that was Deathstalker.
Goodness, I'm looking at this right now. Yeah, it's one of those ones I've recognized the poster. But I really don't, yeah.
Yeah, there's nobody really in it that I recall. Maybe they were back in the day, but, like, it's just so stupid that you just got to love it. Like, most of the movies that I like are kind of dumb. But they just freaking entertain me. It doesn't take much. And this was like one of them. Like, just, I mean, it's so dated and so bad that you just gotta love it.
Oh, this is an Argentina American movie. Okay. So that's why some of the names look a little different. Okay. Yeah.
Like Richard Hill. I don't know any of these guys.
Yeah. He was an actor, author, and like football player. Yeah. He was the Deathstalker. I guess there were two movies on this. I did not realize. Yeah, there were two installations. He played in both of them.
Deathstalker 2?
There it is. There's a series.
Oh yeah, there is. Okay.
Looks like you got some.
I need to say I got some watching it tonight.
Yeah, you got to dig a little bit. Deathstalker. Oh wait, hold on. He's in Deathstalker 4. So there's a bunch between.
Jesus.
Yeah, so he did the first one, and then Deathstalker 4 that he was in was in 91.
Long.
So I bet you got some digging to do, man. It sounds like you might be.
Dude, there's a Deathstalker movie base. Holy shit!
Yep, yep. And
Dude, Deathstalker 3, The Warriors from Hell. Oh, God.
Now, this is going to go, this is going to kind of connect to what we did last week with the Fantastic Four. These are Roger Corman movies, by the way.
I'm going to have to watch these.
Yeah,
now.
You got to do a little thinking.
There's only one Deathstalker. Now I have to watch the sequel now.
It's okay. I've delved into, I'm watching Lone Wolf and the Cub. It's a Japanese
movie. Yeah. Oh, such a good movie. Well,
there's five. So I found all five because our local art movie house did it. Did the first one this past Saturday. And I was like, oh, man, it would have been fun to see it. So I did some digging online, found a couple of spots that I can see all five of the series. So I downloaded them. I'm like, oh, yeah, this is going to be fun.
Made that weird movie about this, too. I remember that. That had, like, the disco soundtrack. That one's pretty cool. If you're going to find it, you should do a watch along to it.
For which one?
It's like a version of a Wolf and Cub.
Oh.
But they did it, and it's like...
There's a lot of them out there, dude.
But there is one certain one that they released. I'm sure there's tons of them. But it had like a disco kind of like synthy soundtrack.
Yeah.
Cause what I remember.
I know the one I'm like watching is the one from the 70s, which is like their original. Then there's like a bunch of anime ones. And there's one in the 80s, early 80s. I think that's probably the one you're talking about. There's one in like the 90s. And like they keep remaking this. I'm like, man, I'm surprised I've never heard of the series before. And then like I said, the NZN, our local, like I said, art house movie theater, when I was doing a playing it this past weekend, I was like, oh, I got to look this up and see what this is about. Very good. So guys, the rest of this month, we will be doing fantasy. But like I said, I think we're going to change it up a little bit. We're not going to go TV and you know all that. We're going to do a little flipping around see what we can do, keep it fresh. So make sure you guys do check it out. If you are interested, check us out on Facebook.
Yes, sirree. See you later.
See you.